I was searching for some video and in the Google search results came across your site about, I ended up on one of your posts, which is about unbundling Fiverr. And yeah, I love this kind of stuff and your post is amazing. So this is what I want to talk to you about. And it's been a while, I think, since you published this one, but the opportunity is still there. You still remember the post at
Yeah,
all?
a little bit. I've been going over it a little bit, going through the database a little bit, and I've reviewed the post a little bit here. Yes, I do remember a little bit. I think a big impetus for that post is Glenn Alsop from formerly Viper Chill and now Gaps, I guess. He published a post like on how he was doing these SEO audits. And I'm not sure if you've seen that or not, but and so I saw that, and then a couple of days later, I saw this Gotcha SEO showed how they went to Fiverr and hired all these different people to do SEO audits. And then they found this one gig, and then they just accidentally noticed that it was being resold on another platform at three times the price or five times the price, whatever. I think it was like they bought it for $15 and somebody was selling it for $75, the exact same service, the exact same layout. It's just like a simple arbitrage thing. So when I saw that, then I just, okay, this is a good place to look for startup ideas. Because Glenn Alsop with his SEO audits, like he's big in the SEO space if people don't know him, but he's been doing SEO work for, like, I bought his course, I don't know, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, a long time ago. And it's easy for him to get clients. So he does these $1,000, $5,000 audits. And so it's easy for him to get clients just because he's got a big name. But he just did this small project and he ended up making six figures off of doing these audits for a short term, just as an experiment, basically, he was doing it. So after that, I just see that you can really productize a lot of things like that, especially on Fiverr. And then I started going down the rabbit hole, and you're finding a lot of people are making like big bucks on these small little gigs. They do these little $100 gigs, and they probably have a team of outsourcers or people that assist them, and they can probably get them done very quickly if you have the right processes in place. And you charge like Fiverr used to be only $5, but now gigs can be like $300. Now it's not really Fiverr anymore. The name doesn't match anymore, but it's a good place just to see because the services are so discreet. It's like, I'll design a logo for you. I'll come up with a new slogan for your website. I'll record 1 minute of audio for you. And it's everything is such a focused thing. So it's easy for people to go in there and say, okay, yeah, I need this. I'll buy this. Because there's no evaluation. You can see all the reviews. You know exactly what you're going to get. It's not like shooting in the dark. Like you're trying to hire an agency to say, okay, can you help me take my blog to the next level? Like you don't even know what the next steps are going to be, but on Fiverr, you can follow the process and it's very clear. So I think it's a great place to find ideas and what to do next.
Yeah, totally agree. But it's so funny because I happen to be a huge Glenn fan too, like Viper Chill. I still remember like plugin ID block you wrote ages ago. Which course did you buy years ago? I think Cloud Living something was his thing back then.
I don't even know, actually. I don't even remember. I just know that I bought, like, he was launching something and then he had early bird pricing. And I just remember that, okay, I missed out on the early bird pricing because I was in a different time zone when it launched. So I thought, there's only 50 spots. And I said, hey, I really want this. Can I still get this? And I just remember that he sold it to me after the 50 spots were done. So that's my memory of that. This was like 12 years ago, at least.
Yeah.
I can't even remember. I can't remember.
It's funny because Glenn and I are roughly the same age, I think, but I learned a ton from him, I think 10 years ago or so, really when I started hustling online with first little experiments. And I still remember printing out his blog posts so I can read them at work. So I worked at a hospital. It was mandatory here in Germany. You have to do one social year or whatever it's called. And I worked in a hospital. It was boring. So I always printed out his blog posts and read them. We had no tablets back then.
Yes.
Super.
I
He's an amazing writer at the very least, and obviously also a great marketer.
Yes. I know, like I interviewed his, I don't know, his partner or his friend Diggy. So
Yeah.
I've connected with Diggy quite a few times online, but never Glenn directly anyways.
Yeah,
And
actually, I chatted briefly with Glenn because I once tested one of his plugins or something like that. And also we exchanged emails, but I can't remember the topic. It was really 10 years ago. And yeah, he's gone a bit dark recently, but I it's funny. I just saw that he's now following me on Twitter, actually. So I got to reach out to him.
Yes, good.
send him a hi and tell him like the backstory that I actually, yeah, he is one of the main sources of inspirations that got me try this whole online thing, show that it's possibly and also how it's done. Really cool. Really cool. Tangent, but back to Fiverr.
Well, I think Glenn is a great example. If you specialize and focus and do it long enough, you can build really big businesses out of all these really tiny ideas. I think most people that experiment and jump around from idea to idea and they never really get good and specialize at anything. And so everybody I know that has just stuck with a single idea long enough finds a way to make it to succeed in some way or another. That's one thing that's missing from this equation is most people give up way too soon.
True. But let's not forget that Glenn wrote a personal development blog for a long time.
it's okay to pivot. Pivoting is good. Yeah. But that personal development blog, he mastered all his SEO skills. I call it the creator game. You're playing a game and it's like the content creation, the constant learning, the constant networking and developing your promotional skills is going to help you in any business you do in the future, any job, any business. So it's a constant kind of, if you keep playing that game, you're going to level up your skills regardless of how it ends up.
Yeah, I love that analogy. Pecky, like not boring, wrote this post on the great online game. I think Tim Urban from Wait But Why calls it Grand Theft Life, which is also really nice. Yeah. It's in the Adam post, the chef and the cook or something. I love that analogy. And it's actually one of these frames I have for this learning a bit more about how to win at the great online game, because this is what I feel is missing from, for example, Pecky's post, right? He's talking about it and he's talking about people who are winning, but he's not going into how do we actually win. And I think that's fascinating. And there are completely new playbooks now emerging. And like you said, like there are all these different components you gotta master and you slowly level up. And it's just a very useful frame of mind. I think you have that in your post. Like the key is to just treat it as a game. There are no guaranteed returns.
Yeah.
So you better have fun. And yeah, you can do cool stuff like gamify it for yourself. Think about, okay, I have these skill. You have a skill. What is here in the skill tree? That's a useful exercise, right? What skills are important? And then how do I level up? Yeah, at least I love thinking like that. And it always motivates me.
Yeah, same thing with my newsletter, my Idea Economy newsletter. It's not making any money yet. And it's slowly, consistently growing. But every week that I publish the newsletter, I learn a lot. I connect with a lot of new people. I'm building an audience slowly. Like, these are all things that I can't lose. It's all beneficial. A lot of people always say, oh, you're so lucky you get these ideas and you get these opportunities all the time. It's not luck. I put in of course, there's a serendipity part of it that comes in. If you're in the right place at the right time, an opportunity will come to you. But if you're playing the game all the time, that's how you get opportunities. If you're not playing, if you're not trying, nobody knows to contact you. You have no connections. There's zero chance. So I don't think it's a game you play to win. I think it's just a game you play for the sake of playing. It's that's where the enjoyment comes from. That's where the learning comes from.
The infinite. Yeah. It's an infinite game. The infinite game. Yeah, totally agree. And it's funny because another coincidence. I'm working on a huge blog post about engineering serendipity, because this is one of the things I really want to focus on, because I did a great job, I think, doing this 2020 and 2021. I stopped and I think it was a mistake. So I'm back at it. And there are really cool things you can do to bring luck into your life, as you put it. Writing a newsletter, obviously, is an amazing way of doing this, because what most people don't realize is that people quickly forget that other people exist. And like the opportunities are usually sent to people who are top of mind. If you yesterday talked to a friend and today you see something cool, you send him a message. Hey, I just saw this. And having a newsletter, a weekly newsletter, is just a great way to stay top of mind. And sending these little postcards, it's the same on Twitter, right? Every day I'm posting a little update. Hey, this is what I'm doing right now. The goal with these postcards is not to go viral. It's just to signal I'm still here and people see my face and you stay in the conversation and top of mind. And yeah, you get just cool messages, cool people reaching out, opportunities find you. And yeah, that's a whole nother topic, but it's really cool and really fun to think about how you can bring luck into your life. And yeah, newsletter. I also have my personal one, and it's not making any money. I write it only for that purpose.
It's funny because like last week after we chatted, I came across your content twice. I saw your Twitter post on Trump from The Hustle. And also, I think Colonel mentioned you as well, too, that you're a big
contributor
to the community. So it's just like twice I came across you just on from other people recommending your content.
Yeah, suddenly I'm back.
Yes, you're back.
A few people have mentioned this. Yeah, no idea what Jacob discovered. Is he back on coffee? The rumors. No, I just decided to bring more luck into my life. And this means, for example, saying yes to all kinds of meetings. If people reach out, I always say yes. Okay, let's grab a coffee. Why not? And sometimes cool stuff comes out of it. For example, like this shout out in the Colonel newsletter, because Joel and I hopped on a call a few times and brainstorming, just chatting. This is how cool stuff happens. Now back to Fiverr. And I think, yeah, this Viperchill post really started something, because afterward, I saw quite a few people having success with similar services. And Glenn did it with SEO. And I think he also had a few examples of people who copied this model, and it also worked well. And yeah, obviously, there's a huge market, but there are more. One example is Ollie, I don't know his second name actually, but yeah, yeah, exactly. Is he the landing page guy?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to him yesterday as well too. Connected by email. It's funny how it's all connected.
Small world.
Yes.
The internet's still a village.
And so, and that's another great example. Like Ollie just bought like a newsletter that was abandoned by, I forget his name, Ankit something or other, was running this, doing these landing page teardowns basically. And Ollie bought this, and it's perfect synergy with his Roast My Landing Page service. It's just like a very narrow service. And if you build an audience and you get people that are interested in that, I can see that could be a very successful business.
Yeah, just for people who don't know who Ollie is, he's basically the landing page guy. So this is his positioning, and he's selling landing page audits. And yeah, he's doing smart marketing stuff, like offering free audits on Indie Hacker sometimes, or he did it and this is how he got started. And now he's charging, I actually didn't know how much he's charging per audit. I think it
249 pounds.
Oh, that's not too bad. And do you know how long it takes him to do one of these?
I believe it's less than an hour. It's a video kind of real-time audit. Yeah. So it's, and I believe it's less than an hour that he takes to do these things. But I'm sure he does a little bit of preparation before he gets on the video, just that he knows what's going on the page. But let's say even if it's 2 or 3 hours, he's still making pretty good money there for those audits.
Yeah, it's solid at the very least. That's another cool example of these. Yeah, like audits are a pretty sweet niche within this niche of productized services. And just today I had an idea, because I was talking to my friends who I'm doing Tweets on Demand with, and someone, Anthony, actually mentioned a friend hired someone just to rewrite his Twitter bio. That's insane, but there's a market. And if a thing or two about Twitter, the bio is important, right? You don't have a lot of space, so optimizing it is something you should do. And it's an art. And yeah, on the topic of audits, for example, Twitter profile audit could be a very simple niche to test. One idea I just had.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, actually, because even I have trouble with my bio. I have to go through and systematically do it. Like most people just put it up and don't even touch it. I haven't updated my bio in, I don't know, since I started the newsletter, basically. I don't think I've changed much on there for a long time, like a year and a half. And I didn't even put any thought into it. I just wrote something up there quickly. I can't imagine that my bio is converting very effectively. So if you did a more systematic kind of approach to those things, I think it could be very successful. It's a great idea.
Yeah, you have these different elements. You have the cover image, the bio, the location, the URL, the website you put in there, and also the pinned tweet and your profile image. So there's quite a few elements you can play around with, and yeah.
I think I shared a link a couple of weeks ago about a lady that was doing the Twitter header images, and she was charging a couple $100, but she was like a really good illustrator that can do. She gets into your personality and what the topic is about, and does these really in depth kind of like header profile images that were quite good. So like that kind of service, and she was doing really well with them. She was getting, because she turned it into a good business, like a 6-figure business or something. I can't remember the link offhand, but I do recall that last a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is like everybody wants to be the next Facebook or LinkedIn or crypto platform or something, but it's starting from very small beginnings. It's probably the easiest way to go because it really narrows your focus. And so if you're doing like Twitter bios, it's pretty easy to find your audience, and it's pretty easy to prove that you're good at your service, and it's pretty easy to get those skills. So that's a good direction to go. I like those kind of ideas.
Yeah, me too. This is exactly the kind of idea I love, because literally anyone can pull it off. You don't need like some network or funding. You can just do it, and there's zero risk. That's also the really cool thing. You just need some hustle, reach out to people, do it for free until you get some testimonials, and then grow from there. It's very straightforward. So if someone wants to rewrite our Twitter bios, please reach out. They definitely need work.
Again, I don't have the link here, but I came across, because I did a deep dive into Roast My Landing Page before, and I was looking into that market a little bit. If your resource database is presented in a nice Notion database, it can be on Product Hunt and get tons of upvotes. But if it's just like a listing of resources on a WordPress page, then it doesn't count. It can't go on there because it's not cool enough. And so that presentation is important.
Yeah, they banned Airtable products actually. But if you're using, for example, whatever, like one of these wrappers around our table that make the design a bit nicer, it's okay. You won't get shadow banned. Yeah, weird policy. But they know nominated me as Maker of the Year. I'm again a fan.
Yeah.
My beef is settled. I won't say anything negative about them ever again. I gotta put that in my cover image or Twitter bio.
Yes, there you go. Social proof on your website.
Yeah, I actually have a brag page on my website where this kind of stuff ends up. So let's get back to Fiverr, to your post. I also have a few notes, and like the standard playbook or the most straightforward strategy would be just to go on Fiverr, find out what's working, and then spin it off as a premium offering. And you have a few great examples like $1 million headlines or some copywriting, whatever services. Yes.
If you saw the newsletter today, I think I have another one. There's another lady has done like $90,000 a month. She had a $90,000 a month doing copywriting services off of Fiverr. And so people are building like $500,000 businesses off of these services. So it could be anything, but I don't know if you have to take it off of Fiverr anymore. If you can like get the snowball rolling, that build some momentum and get all your friends to buy your gig first, so you get the first 10 reviews or something, and then have a low enough price to attract people in away from the more established sellers, and then slowly raise your prices. It's probably a viable model just to use Fiverr as your distribution channel, because getting that distribution is hard.
It's the hardest part. Yeah.
Yeah, so something like Roast My Landing Page, for example, like Oliver was on Indie Hackers, and he was posting and he does a lot of work to get that initial traction. Maybe now he's starting to get some search engine rankings and getting some traffic online by himself. But a lot of that, there's a big grind involved in that. So if you have some type of distribution channel like Fiverr, or even like the new LinkedIn gig marketplace too, that might even be a better place to go because the prices are higher and it's probably less competitive than Fiverr. I still think you need a way to reach customers. And so you probably make less money, but there's a built-in distribution there.
Yeah, that's a great point. That now that Fiverr is also offering or allowing more expensive services, it totally makes sense to offer your premium services just on Fiverr. And I just had a look and the cut is actually reasonable. This is always what people are complaining about, 20%, which sounds a lot, but they also give you a lot. They give you distribution, they bring you the traffic, all the sales you otherwise probably would not have made. And just for comparison, you know what Amazon's cut is? If you're selling books or digital stuff on Amazon, they take up to 60% or 65%. So 20% sounds unreasonable to me. But yeah, good point.
I had a friend that used Upwork to get all his consulting clients and all his kind of service. He did like marketing consulting. And basically he would apply for all these jobs, but he wouldn't take the job. He would convince the person that you don't need this job. What you need me to do is I can do this. So he used it as a way to sell himself and sell higher end services. You don't need a content writer. You need someone that's going to take over your all online marketing for you and handle all this. And if you hire me, I can do this. So he used Upwork just as a way to get interviews with people. And it was very effective for him. He was doing really well with that. So I think there's, finding a way to use the platforms to your advantage is very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And because another idea when I thought about the issue, about the topic, is that I think there is a lack for something like Gumroad, but for productized services, because turns out that Gumroad actually does not allow services to be sold. And so if you don't want to sell on a platform like Fiverr or Upwork, you actually have to figure out how to handle payments and these kind of things yourself, taxes. So I looked into it and didn't find a good solution. And I did research because, Tweets on Demand is a productized service experiment. And I would love to use something. And so I think that's an opportunity. But if you can do it, of course, staying on Fiverr makes sense because they actually take some work off your shoulders, I think.
Yes, I think another big opportunity is taking a lot of these services or even even like coaching gigs, freelancing work, but making local platforms. Because I think I'm talking to a lot of people. A lot of people want to meet in person. We're moving to a remote work world, but if you're a larger company, you want to hire someone for like a $20,000 project to do your marketing for your business for the next 6 months. You don't want to hire someone on Upwork that you never meet or hire. So you're not going to hire someone on Fiverr, for example. I doubt if the big Fortune 500 companies are searching on Fiverr to hire people to fill vacancies, right? So it's if you had something local where they could actually meet and you can put together teams, like maybe like a Hollywood movie, for example, you get your actors and the cameraman and the lighting guys and the rig guys and whatever you need to make a movie, and you bring them together for these short projects. Doing those things on a local basis too could be very attractive. I think there's a market for that, especially I talked to coaches and fitness coaches and freelancers and designers, and everybody's always asking, how can I promote myself? How can I promote myself? Because it's tough to get to stand out. And so most of it is word of mouth. But if you had local little networks of creatives, basically, that you can say, okay, here's all the fitness coaches in Montreal. Here's all the graphic designers in Montreal. Here's all the web developers in Montreal. Here's all the React developers. Then you can, and they can have their previous projects, and you can have directories of all these people. And so you can hire locally, which I think is going to be a big push as we move more to remote work and people are going to Thailand and to Bali and want to work abroad. I think there's more companies are going to say, no, I want you to be local so we can meet every couple of weeks and go over everything in person. So I think there's going to be some reverse remote work backlash there sometime.
Yeah, that's a great observation, that whenever you have a trend, you also have the anti-movement, or usually everyone is moving into the metaverse at the same time. People want to live in nature and decouple from technology. And in the same way, you have remote work and the movement in the opposite direction. So I really like that. And I was just thinking, if anything like that already exists. And obviously for like handyman, for like it exists, at least here in Denmark, I hired a guy on a platform like that. And I paid some money to, he just installed the lamps. So it was like a productized local service, sweet gig. And yeah, it was a marketplace like this, Handy Hand, it's called. But yeah, it totally makes sense that this would work for digital services or any kind of services.
I think if you're like a plumber in Denmark, for example, you probably don't think about, I need someone to write content for my website, right? You're probably not thinking, oh, there must be marketplaces. I can go to Fiverr, I can go to Upwork, I can do those sites are probably not in their minds at all. They don't care about online business. They don't care about building websites. They do plumbing work, right? I think that we take a lot of the stuff for granted because we live it 24 hours a day. But I think most people, especially people that are making money, are probably not spending so much time playing around with social media and on Twitter and Facebook and all this stuff. They're out there building their business. So it's like, if you can find ways to reach those people locally where they're going to see over and over again and say, okay, all the handymen are on this particular platform and this is where everybody's hiring from. So I need to be on this platform. Like it's a different kind of selling pitch. It's much easier to get clients that way.
Agreed. It probably would require some hustle to get things going, yes, to actually onboard people. But yeah, totally makes sense. Any other niches you found interesting when you looked at the data? Because I remember you actually looked at all the categories, all the top selling gigs, right?
Yeah. Well, I made a database available to everybody who subscribes to the newsletter. So basically people can go through there and see what all the top selling products are. But it's really surprising what is successful. Like people doing like Jesus videos, doing narrations from Jesus, and they can sell. People want a message from Jesus. And usually it's humorous, but or like Donald Trump impersonations or all of these obscure things. For example, like manga is really big, but Japanese, my wife is Japanese, so we've been watching a lot of manga. But if you did anything, like if you were a good impersonator, you could do Luffy's voice, the main character for One Piece, and do messages for teenagers for birthday presents, those kind of things, all you could do, the more extreme, the more likely it could succeed because people are going to the margins. And so I think another really cool company that I think is the next big thing is Mischief. Have you been following Mischief?
I think I've seen it, but I don't remember the details.
So basically it's spelled MSCHF. If you type that in, you'll probably come up their site, but they basically do these drops of products every like week or 2 weeks. And then they've sold things like the rubber chicken bomb. It's a rubber chicken that also doubles as a bomb. They've done like Jesus shoes, like they get holy water inside shoes. They did Satan shoes. It's like got real live blood inside the shoes. And they do all these things. A recent project was where they're copying luxury shopping bags because everybody wants to go shopping and have all the Louis Vuitton and Chanel and all these fancy shopping bags. But instead of actually going and buying it at stores, they just sell the bags only. And so they're trying to invite all these companies to sue them for like copyright infringement, trademark infringements. And so they do all these things that get a lot of press, a lot of attention, and it's working for them. Like they can sell a lot of stuff. They had this one project that was that you buy these boxes and you don't know what's inside. You can get, it could be worth $7,000 or it could be worth $0. But one thing is if you buy it and don't open it and return it like 3 months later, they will give you $1,000 if you don't open the box and just return it. And so they do these like crazy stunts that get huge amounts of press, and they're building a business out of it. They've done like something like 40 or 50 of these launches. And so you can see it with places like Supreme and all these t-shirt brands and things that are, they're doing, that's what the NFT craze is. You do these drops for a limited time only. If you don't get in now, you're going to miss it. And you get like teenagers spending $1,000 on running shoes or hooded jerseys. And so it's like, you get this really intense scarcity of these rare kind of interesting projects but they take it to an extreme. I think because we're in peak everything. That's the way I look at it. If you look like the AI copywriting services, I thought, oh, the AI copywriting service, this is a cool idea. Now there's 60 or 70 of them. There's different companies. Like, how do you go and choose which AI copywriting service you're going to use when there's 60 or 70 and there's probably a new one coming up every 2 weeks? Because it's anybody can basically take this technology and build a business off of it, but it's very hard to make money from it for the long term because there's just so much competition in every niche. So the real secret of all these things is understanding how to play into the meme culture and build these things that go viral in a short time. And you just have to do crazy stunts all the time, basically, if you want to succeed in a lot of business. And I think that's what a lot of like NFTs are, and that's what a lot of these culture products are. Because nobody needs to spend $1,000 on a pair of running shoes. Like, I don't care how cool the running shoes are. There's spending $1,000. To me, I don't get it. I'm a minimalist, and I would never spend $1,000 on a pair of running shoes. But if you're like a teenager, maybe in a trendy city, and you show up with these $1,000 running shoes or something, then maybe you're the coolest kid in the block. So it's those kind of things are catching on.
Yeah, super fascinating. And you got this effect that there's the first mover advantage, right? With copy.ai, they are killing it, but their product, in my opinion, is not very good. So, and they have no real competitive advantage other than their brand that they started early and did a very good job at marketing by exploiting the built-in public playbook, basically just sharing the hockey stick growth in the early days, because this is what gets clicked, what gets liked on Twitter. So they did it in a smart way. But yeah, they, like, anyone can build like these copywriting tools in a weekend or even 2 hours. It's super easy once you have access, and now I have access. But back when they were doing it, there was this waiting list, and this is what protected them. that's all, right? Because it's in the beginning, it was really just an API, a very ugly wrapper around the GPT-3 API. And that was it. And now they actually moved to their custom models, because turns out GPT-3 is expensive. So it's hard to make money, because they always only shared MRR, their revenue, but never their profits. So I was always very curious what their GPT-3 OpenAI bill actually looked like. So what's the profit? But yeah, they got a lot of funding now on the back of all the hype. And I'm building custom models, but in my opinion, the quality of the output has gotten noticeably worse. And this has happened with a few of these AI products, that they start strong when they are still using GPT-3 and the product is working quite well. But then, yeah, it's time to earn money, or for other reasons, they switch to custom models. And yeah, it's far from trivial to build a model like GPT-3, obviously. So tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
And yeah, very interesting. And yeah, like, marketing is really what set different products apart in this noisy world. How many of these AI writers are there now? It's insane. But it's also interesting that there are all these niches, right? For example, one guy built one just laser focused on product descriptions. Super smart. And obviously you can do better things if you niche down. You can fine tune the model and build better prompts, and
that's good. That's what I mentioned that in the Unbundling Fiverr article as well too. I think there's a lot of opportunities if you can automate your productized service gigs with AI somehow. If you're doing marketing slogans for websites or taglines for websites, and you had an AI tool to help you do this, it wouldn't be so hard for you to pump off like 10 different slogans for a company. If you get their main, what do you want to say? What are your main benefits that you're offering your customers? And then you pump those into an AI engine and have this computer spit this thing out in 10 minutes rather than you thinking about it for an hour. So I think there's a lot of ways you can leverage those Fiverr gigs with AI if you had a focus service like your friend service there.
Absolutely. Yeah, agreed. And one example I wrote about a few weeks ago is naming. Right, the naming niche, which is wild. There, the story of a teenager in the UK making, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars naming Chinese babies or something. And yeah. Also like Stardust Story, this project by Pat Waltz. And I did some research and it turns out that a huge percentage of his traffic, his incredible traffic, is coming from people looking for names. They want to know, how can I name a boutique business? How can I name a fashion brand? And I didn't do the math what the exact number is, but it's incredible. Like I would say 50% of his traffic is just coming from these terms. And it's very easy like to churn out these pages. And he's very open about it, that he basically just copies a bunch of stuff together. This is his whole approach and this programmatic SEO. And it, like volume is the name of the game. You just put up tons of pages with just okay content. And yeah, that's how you win that game. But obviously you can do a much better job, solve this problem in a much better way if you actually give people more than just a static list of names. And one way of doing this very effectively is leveraging something like GPT-3. And you can have a little productized service. Someone wants a brand name, a business name, whatever. And they just give you a little description, a little pitch, what they have in mind. And you feed this into GPT-3 and do some manual curation, obviously, because sometimes GPT-3 puts out nonsense. But then, yeah, you put this in a few times, pick the best names, and send back a list of 10. So that's a cool gig. And you can do this for all kinds of niches, like naming startups, naming babies. I can't remember, but a few people actually sent me cool ideas after I sent out the email. And they're actually experts charging, I don't know, $500 or so per hour, just helping people name stuff. So obviously this is, and like the most famous example, of course, is marketing agencies helping Pepsi name the new Pepsi or stuff like that for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that's the very top of the end. But yeah.
A related business that I saw that I thought was pretty cool is that they sell domain names along with the names and a logo. It's like they do a package. They
Brand
they
Bucket.
Buy up. Is it Brand Bucket?
Yeah.
I think that was a very cool idea because like you could buy a whole package. Like you get the name, already a decent looking logo, maybe not customized to what you would want, but it's good enough for if you're a small business just starting off, so you don't have to waste your time and mental power looking into that kind of stuff. And then you get a URL, because buying URLs is a big pain too, right? Because if you, that's even the bigger problem, not the name, because you got to see if the URL is available and trying to find some kind of variation that you can make it work for yourself. So if you can get like a decent URL and a decent name and a logo, like taking it up the value chain and offering like more comprehensive services would be a good idea as well.
Yeah. And coming back full circle, Glenn actually wrote about Brand Bucket on Vipochill. I think this is where he bought like his new domains, gaps.com and detailed.com. And he has this one post, how buying a domain for, I don't know how much money, revealed incredible opportunity or something along these lines as his headline. Super cool post, but this is how I learned about Brand Bucket. And yeah, a funny story. I actually owned the domain brandnames.ai because I had the idea of building basically Brand Bucket, but just with AI generated names, a more personalized version with AI ideas. And it's actually not so hard of an idea. And basically got it working, but never launched it so far. I should do that. I'm still, I guess what I always try to figure out is the correct model, how I can really do this in a way that provides value, but also it's not a huge headache for me. And this is where I got stuck because very expensive, custom models suck, and hosting them is a huge pain anyway. So I guess the correct angle would be to start with a little productized service. People, like I said, people put in the pitch and I use my algorithm to find the names and check their domains and send it back to them. That could be a cool side hustle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, get search tools to do that. Another, just one second. Can I talk later? I'm on a call, JJ, please. Sorry.
No problem.
He doesn't understand that idea of a monocle. Now I forget my train of thought there. Brownies. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought
there. No problem. There. And I mean,
one more idea too. Like getting back to the other idea, like one of the best entrepreneurs in our space is like Peter Levels.
Of course.
And to have that story and just building projects all the time and just doing cool things, like having that story and brand, it's kind of very related to the mischief kind of thing. Having that story and that brand and that kind of, he's almost like a celebrity kind of status now. And so anything that he does will be supported just because it's him. And I think that's what makes that's what makes a lot of these ideas stand out, is if Peter Levels is behind it, okay, like I want to move to Portugal. And so you get these kind of, I think you need to do more than just be one of the 60 AI kind of GPT-3 kind of platforms out there. You need to get one, like, for example, Peter Levels is one did. What was his AI generated? He was coming up early
IdeasAI.net. IdeasAI.net.
Yes. And I think you got a little bit of publicity with that. And I was subscribed to that for a little while. And so anything that he does is interesting because there's a personality behind it, a story behind it. I think that's a bigger part of business success. When there's so much competition now, you need to stand out beyond just the idea, because the idea is pretty, anybody can copy the idea. If you, any idea you mention that's good, it's going to probably get about 20 or 30 different imitators in the next couple of months, right?
Yeah. And I guess this really brings us back to the whole idea of the great online game. Like, how do you do that? And
yes,
this is what I've been studying for the past few weeks, or because I want to get better at it. And there are certain things you can definitely do. And there are common patterns if you study people like him. And for example, I put out this tweet about Trung, but today I put out a tweet about Harry Dry, and a thread actually. And he has a similar status. Not quite at the same level, but he's in a similar bucket, that in the sense that he has quite a few super friends. He has a story, and everything he puts out, he has people rooting for him. Basically, that's the thing. And one key element is that these people have a origin story, right? Batman. And for Peter, this was his 12 startups in 12 months experiment, which is where all of his reputation came from. Because everyone who has ever tried to build an audience knows that getting the first 1,000 subscribers is the hardest part. And the best way to jump over that hurdle is to have a very good origin story. And Peter has 12 in 12. And Harry, for example, has the Kanye story, right? Which mm-hmm. is this blog post, which he put on a separate domain, thekanyestory.com. And it's basically just a write-up of how he tried to launch a dating site for Kanye West fans, and it failed, but he got into some conversation with the manager. And yeah, this really put him on the map. He was a nobody, and then he was somebody. Everyone who read this piece immediately knows, okay, this is a young hustler, marketing, and he's sharing his learnings. And of course, anyone can put these attributes in his Twitter bio, but this is not going to convince anyone. This is not how it works. But yeah, show don't tell is the motto, obviously, and this is how you do it. And there are different categories within the theme of having an origin story. You can do a crazy stunt like Harry Dry. You can do an experiment like Peter Levels, or which is also what I did. I did it with my Bootstrap MBA for that very reason. I studied it and I understood it, and it worked magically. This is how I went from zero to, I don't know, 300 subscribers. And there are many other examples. For example, Daniel Vassallo, who's now selling his courses, his Twitter courses. But the big secret, okay, it's not really a secret, is that he got his first 3,000 followers from one blog post that he wrote. He put it on Medium and it went viral. And this is how we went from zero. He was just some random engineer at Amazon who quit his job, to Twitter personality. And suddenly he can do these cohort courses, sell almost anything. He's selling, he got into woodworking and now selling little cutting boards or whatever, and people are buying it for $200.
Yeah.
So this really proves it. And yeah, it's another great example of the origin story, because it's titled Only Intrinsic Motivation Lasts. And it's why he quit his job at Amazon and his plan, what he's doing. And it's funny, I actually have a database of these origin stories. I'm a collector. That's, yeah, a funny tangent.
Yeah, I have a little bit of different take on that. Like Harry, I'm a huge fan of Harry Dry as well. But he puts a lot of work into his content, and his content is way better than anything else I've seen. Like his format of the before and after pics, that's perfect for in blog posts. He put massive amounts of time in promoting on Indie Hackers and on Reddit. He goes in all these communities, and he's like, the quality of his posts are so good. Like his recent copywriting examples, he basically did I forget what it was called, but basically, do you know what it's called? Copy something with marketing in there, copy marketing or something it's called. But his most recent thing that was on Product Hunt, and he got tons of upvotes, but it's basically a collection of taglines and good copy from different websites. But the way he presents his information is very unique too, because he puts in a lot more effort. It's not like a marginal effort. It's not like you write a long form content, but it's long form content that's like with great design and massive promotion behind it. He'll go on Indie Hackers and in the Indie Hackers newsletters, you still see his old posts from a year and a half ago. He's reposting them again and getting promotion again from his old ideas, like the how to do a landing page and all these basic ideas that worked a year ago or a year and a half ago. He's reposting them to these platforms, and he's starting again and leveraging in that audience. So like I agree that there's like working on good ideas, but also promoting it very effectively. And like that to me is this, I don't know if I would call that an origin story. I call it a big idea. The way I call them big ideas, like for example, the Ship 30 and 30 with Dickie. What was it? What's his name?
Dickie Bush.
What's his last? Dickie Bush. Like that's a genius idea, right? It's just, or another one is Jack Butcher and his build once, sell twice idea. Like he was doing these images online, and they're really cool images. It's black and white. It's simple, blah, blah, blah. But then he gets picked up. He does it from a famous guy. I forget who he copied there. He did the breakdown of a famous venture capitalist. Do you know who I'm talking about? What's the guy?
Naval Ravikant. Yeah.
Was it Naval's? So he did Naval's post, and Naval retweets it, and then he puts it into Stardom. Like you immediately get tens of thousands of followers. And like I've been following all these guys. I think you mentioned this already too. Almost everybody can attribute their success to like three or five kind of big posts, like maybe Twitter posts or blog posts or whatever it is. It's only a handful that account for 95% of their followers and traffic and subscribers. But the thing they don't mention is they put out hundreds and hundreds to find out which those three or five is. So it's a constant game of leveling up and playing and trying and doing different things and connecting that gets them taken to a different level. Like in the case of like Trung and Steph, sure, they're very smart and very talented people, but working for The Hustle and getting promoted in The Hustle's newsletter of 1.5 million subscribers sure helps a lot too. It's not just an origin story. It's like they found a good distribution channel to get their message out to the world. Jack Butcher did it through like Naval Ravikant and getting mentioned by this guy. And like, if you do those things often enough, you're going to get lucky once in a while, and you're going to get a share. You're going to get somebody big to follow you, somebody to promote your content. So you have to constantly do really good work with really distinctive ideas that stand out, and you have to be lucky. And you get luck by doing it long enough and trying enough different things.
Yeah, that's the tricky part of the 80-20 everyone talks about, that you never know
which
is the 20. Yeah. But no, what I was trying to say is that if you are at zero, and if you want to go from zero to 100 or 1,000 or whatever the first level is, then I think having a compelling origin story is a very effective strategy. Obviously, not everyone has used it, but it's a very common pattern. It worked for me, it worked for Peter, it worked for Harry, it worked for Daniel and many others. And of course, you're not sad afterwards, right? Afterward, the fun really just begins. But getting off the ground, which is super, super hard here, I think this is what people should attempt to do. And yeah, just having a lens or whatever you want to call it, where you can bundle your efforts and see the world through, and which gives you an excuse to reach out to people, whatever, because you need that. It's another way of looking at this origin story, right? Maybe that's a better phrase, like a lens. I got that from Sebastian Marshall. Yeah, having a lens, for example, for me, having this bootstrap MBA lens was very effective because people understand what this guy wants. So he's not trying to sell me something. He's actually trying to learn something. This is why he's reaching out and it's working. But yeah, afterward, there are these different levels, right, in the game, getting from zero, and then you can hustle a little. But if you really wanna reach the highest levels, you need to get known for one thing, obviously. But the tricky thing is, and David Perel talks about, he calls it the personal monopoly or something. Mm-hmm. The problem is that I see so many people putting the guy into their Twitter bio, and it's not doing anything. It's not working. This is not how it works. And it didn't work for David Perel that way. He just did a bunch of stuff and then noticed that the writing stuff is resonating. And this is how he became the writing guy. And the same is true for Jack Butcher and everyone else. They didn't start with a grand plan. Okay, I'm going to become this and that, because you never know how the market responds, or what's going to resonate, or what you actually enjoy doing in the long term. So I rather like the idea of letting your personal monopoly emerge by just, putting a bunch of stuff out there and then observing what works and what doesn't, and then doubling down. And this is how you find your niche, your thing. And you can't force it. And if you're trying to force it, it will go wrong. Almost certainly.
For example, like in for Idea Economy, I've written 4 original articles for this. Well, like Unbundling Fiverr is one of them. So I've written 4 original articles for the site so far, and they've accounted for 400 or 500 of my subscribers, right? It's just like 4. So writing original content and trying to be somewhat controversial or saying something different, or having the Unbundling Fiverr, the goal was that to be a comprehensive post that would get backlinks. And so I got a lot of backlinks from that. And so all those things, doing those kind of things pays off over time. If you do that long enough, what's the big, I'm losing all my names here. Well, the one that just sold the SF Backlinko.
Brian Dean.
Brian Dean from Backlinko, right? Just sold his sites to SEMrush. Like that is a lot of hard work. That's just grind, like grinding it out on super long form content that ranks. It's so good that it beats everybody else in the rankings. That's the secret, is you do something really good for a really long time, and that's how you succeed. It's a lot of this is not rocket science. It's you just got to put in the grind for a long time. And so Harry Dry is the same way to me anyways. Like, he puts in a lot of work. I can imagine those posts taking 40 or 50 hours to do, because it's like, even the way he color codes it, he uses those, like that light green and the light pink colors to highlight the different texts. I'm seeing like a half a dozen people copying that format, and it's working. Like on Indie Hackers, there's a few people copying that format now, and they're getting traffic because it looks really good and it's just a really good idea. So taking a big idea like that and making it your own a little bit works over time. It works over time. Same thing with Dickie Bush and the Ship 30 for 30. There was another takeoff on the 12 startups in 12 months. Somebody did that. I think it was called the Bootstrap. Not your site, but do you know who did that one? They had a project to do 12 startups in 12 months.
A few people, but no.
But it was a good idea. Like, they got like 100 people to sign up and pay like $100 for it. So they made a little bit of money. I think it fizzled out over time because it's hard to do 12 startups in 12 months. And so not many people are going to finish that cohort. So but the idea is just, it's such a good idea that resonates with people. So if you can be a collector of those ideas, like you say you are, you're building a database, it's very cool. Another big one is Nathan, and I don't know why my mind is a blank right now of everybody, but he does a daily SaaS podcast. Like I have a post on him on Medium too. I call the marketing genius of Nathan Latka. Like his ideas are so smart. It's brilliant. Like he wrote a book And in order to make this book a bestseller, he contacted all these big companies and say, I'll mention this if you, I'll mention this early in the book if you buy a whole bunch of copies and pay to get inside this book. So he turned it into a bestseller by contacting people and putting them in his book. He made these, he played off the ego of all these CEOs that wanted to be more famous, right? So it's, if you have a smart idea like that behind your basic business plan, it helps a lot. A lot of people don't start with a solid idea. And so everybody says execution is important. It's the pivot. You got to experiment and try things. But if you're starting with a weak idea, it makes this whole business formation thing a much more difficult. So like starting with a good idea is important, I think.
Yeah,
that's kind of like that's the impetus behind idea economy, because like a lot of people are say like ideas are nothing. It's all execution. Yes, execution is important, but it's if you're starting with a bad idea, it's pretty hard to make it succeed. You'll be pushing a giant boulder up the hill forever. But if you have something with momentum, people call it like product market fit. When you have something that it just hits and starts connecting with people, that's a good idea, and it just naturally starts flowing. And sometimes you have to experiment to find that. And sometimes it can be engineered, because some people seem to be doing good at doing that over and over again. Like maybe Peter Levels has got that intuition or the cult of personality or whatever it is behind him, because it seems like he's
a bit of both.
Midas touch there. Yes. And so it's the execution, it's good ideas, and it's constantly trying new things. And it's like playing on the mimetic desires of people. Like you have to be really good at getting memes out into the public, right? Trump from Hustle he has some really funny, good memes that spread very easily. So it's if you have a distribution channel like The Hustle that promotes you and you have good ideas, you're unstoppable. Like I can see him having a billion followers in a relatively short time, because he's that good. He's got the distribution channel nailed down.
Yeah. We should repeat this another time, because I gotta run. Unfortunately, okay. But I really enjoyed this. And just funny, another funny coincidence, because actually Nathan Ludger was one of the first people I studied as part of my Bootstrap MBA. And I also have a huge post on his strategies. And yeah, he actually retweeted it back in the days, and this added, I don't know, I think it doubled my follower count at the time. That's another funny coincidence. And yeah, super cool. There's so much to learn, I think, from people who are winning at the great online game. Yeah. That's my frame. And yeah, we should do this another time and just chat about people who are winning at the great online game and what they're doing, how they're doing. I think that's a cool topic in itself.
I'd like to share databases of all the people you got and all the people I got, see how many are the same. It's one thing that's very interesting to me is like of the people that are really standing out, it's only like 100 or 200 people. We're not talking like thousands or tens of thousands of people. It's like a tiny percentage. Like my recent post was like saying there is no creator economy middle class, because it's only the exceptional at the top that get all the rewards. And if that's not going to change, that power law distribution is not going to change, because it's like there's certain things you need to do to get to that top echelon, and very few people are doing. Yeah, it's interesting. It's like the Dickie Bushes and the Nathan Lotkas and the Jack Butchers and the Sam Pars. There's probably like 200 people that consistently stand out and are standing above and beyond everyone else. The niches, the long tail doesn't work, because you don't make money in the long tail unless you're Amazon.
Yeah, that it was a romantic idea from Chris Jensen that he wrote this book, The Long Tail, and popularized this whole concept that the internet finally enables the long tail. But yeah, no, it just makes the winners bigger. And yeah, we have even more blockbusters. It's crazy that it worked out that way. But yeah, people are paralyzed by the number of choices, so it naturally concentrates on a small number of big blockbuster winners, and everything else never shows up at the top lists, and no one's gonna read these books, no one's gonna follow them. That's unfortunate, but yeah, the reality. Awesome.
All right, it was good talking to you. Yeah, it was nice to riff on all these ideas. Next time, yeah, I would like to do a conversation on the who's winning at the great online game. That would be a good one, and go through. That'd be a good post. I think good idea, good topic of conversation.
Yeah, let's do it. And we can maybe just then prepare some notes, like you said, compare share notes on people we have on our list, people we have already analyzed, And yeah, then we can just talk about it, like these patterns we are seeing, the strategy, our own little experiments, what's working, what's resonating. And that would be very fun. So I will just